Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Pat Lynch, who is the VP of Enablement Excellence and Innovation at Mindtickle. Hi, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Adrian. Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Excellent. So, Pat, for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about yourself and a bit about the work that you do?
Absolutely. So I have a bit of an eclectic business background, have been in the selling profession for over 20 years, worked for large corporations like FedEx, Ricoh, and Xerox, worked for a small boutique research advisory firm to sales and marketing leaders, and I recently joined Mindtickle to head up not only sales enablement, but also to start the channel partner program for our company as well.
Excellent. Now, I know, Pat, we were talking before this interview and we were discussing, we were discussing lots of different things, but then we got stuck into a groove around discussing, you know, the state of learning in organizations, and that's all related to what we'll get into later on. But we were agreeing that learning in organizations is a key input in making any organization competitive, and so they're able to deliver a great service and great experience and stuff. But you actually had some interesting thoughts to share on that. I mean, I wonder if you can tell me a little bit about what you think are some of the challenges facing organizations when it comes to learning, because that'll sort of set the frame for what we're going to talk about in a bit.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Adrian. I think the operative word you use there is learning. Mm-hmm. So if we all just think about our time growing up, going to school, how many people say, I went to college to get trained?
Right.
Maybe some, right? You might get trained in a trade, but really we go to school to learn, mm-hmm. right? Mathematics, spelling. But what's fascinating or interesting is in corporate America, we often train our people.
Mm-hmm.
So what shifted? What difference has taken place here? And I would say the difference is we're focusing on training people, yet we've raised them to learn through academia. And what we've done, you know, at least in the States and probably elsewhere around the world, is we've taken the classroom environment and we've applied that to corporate America. Round peg, square hole. What's happening, and it worked for many years,
yes,
is we were educating people, but then we thought, well, we could train them in corporate, you know, companies. But the reality is, and this is what's happening because of technology and data analytics, our people are not really learning. They're getting trained, but especially with millennials, it's just not actually sustainable. You're not getting the results that you're looking for, and it's caused a real frustration for those responsible for learning, training, and even sales leaders who are looking for people to perform, you know, month in, month out.
Pat, that's really interesting because, I mean, you won't know this, I don't think, but I early in my career, I mean, I trained as an economist, but then also trained as a teacher. And so worked in both areas. So I worked both in schools and universities and also in the economics profession. And the interesting, I also do a lot of volunteering with around enterprise education with some local schools and things. And so I'm really interested in that whole, the idea about schools and education and
and learning and stuff. But the distinction that you made around learning and training, I mean, I think that's what's really interesting, is that actually, maybe if we reflect on that a bit more, that we can think, well, actually, maybe schools were focused on learning to start with, and that's kind of what they have at their heart. But because we've become so metric-driven, and actually what we're doing is we're not necessarily cultivating learning, but we're training people to pass exams in large part. So we end up going down this thing as that we're reducing people's capability to actually kind of learn. I mean, would you agree with that, or is that just me banging a drum?
Yeah, no. I think you struck on something, and that is reducing the learner's capability to learn. It's almost like you have heard the term, you know, train to the least common denominator.
Yes.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's really promoting a culture of learning. I would call that, you know, hoop jumping, compliance learning. But, you know, what's really, I got to tell you, Adrian, it's we really are on the cusp. I know tipping point might sound a bit too strong, but I think a lot of frustration on the part of chief learning officers and others is really starting to boil over, right, not into the classroom, but into the real room of people's workplaces.
Right.
And so you can't have a chief learning officer saying, out of frustration, I want a rich learner engagement.
Yeah.
And I want everything to take place via mobile. And it's not happening.
Right.
Right. So, and the question is, well, why isn't it? And I would say, to answer my own question, is because, quite frankly, I think a lot of leaders or managers need to take a risk.
Right.
Look, change is uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And you were an educator. I started in education in college. And any change to any type of profession is uncomfortable. But the reality is, as an educator, right, an educator is responsible to make sure the student learns,
yes.
Right? And how do you know? Well, there's scores, et cetera. But when you're actually in the workplace, now the whole game changes. And I think that's a genuine paradigm shift is absolutely coming, Adrian. And
right.
I really do believe it's being driven by millennials, it's being driven by data analytics, and it's being driven by the eventual need for tangible, measurable outcomes.
Do you think it's also being driven by this idea that because the environment is becoming, technology is enabling things to change so fast and also facilitating the entry into new market entrants from all over the place into even traditional industries, and such that it's demanding that companies become more agile and more adaptable, and the thing that's at the very, very heart of agility and adaptability is understanding and learning, and therefore that becomes almost the thing that's driving all this change. You have all the demographic changes with that, about the millennials and mobile platforms and all these different sort of things. But is it because that actually, if an organization collectively and also individually doesn't learn, then they're going to be held beneath the water?
Well, I'm not, you know, that could be. But let me just point out something I heard from a professor, which I found very shocking. Okay. This professor has been teaching in a university for 30 years.
Right.
This professor teaches business classes, including sales.
Yes.
And this professor said to me, Pat, I'm at a loss. And I'm like, what do you mean you're at a loss? He said, I'm not sure how to teach this Gen Z.
Right.
And I'm like, well, wait a second. You've been a professor in a university for 30 years. I mean, I was a bit alarmed. And what I learned from this was that when you have millennials who were, I believe, the first generation to be born into technology.
Yes.
That's a disruptor, okay, in many areas, including, as I think we're finding out, in how people learn.
Sure.
And so now you have the second generation, Gen Z, born into technology.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're going to put up with instructor-led training?
No.
And sit in a desk for 50 minutes?
No.
It's not happening. And this professor is like, can you help me? I need help to actually fully engage my students, make it interactive, make it fun, make it mobile. So all of a sudden, Adrian, for the very first time, I just heard a professor tell me what I know needs to happen in the workplace, but he's telling me this has to happen in a college learning environment, in a classroom.
Yeah. I mean, so that then also kind of takes me back to, it reminds me of something else that you said, where you were saying, you know, and related back to a previous point you made, you were talking about conversations with these chief learning officers, and that they are just almost like pulling their hair out, many of them, with the learning management systems that are at the heart of their learning training kind of efforts, because they're not fit for purpose anymore because of this changing dynamic. I mean, that's sort of tying all that together right now, almost like an LMS, a learning management system, is almost like a manifestation of how we have traditionally trained and tried to teach people. Would that be fair? And therefore, those things need to massively change if we're going to keep up with all these changing dynamics.
Right. So, I mean, I would look at, you know, a learning management system, and I'm not disparaging any LMS.
No.
Some are outstanding, and there's definitely a role, but I've coined them legacy management systems, not because I have a bias,
right,
but because of what I've heard from chief learning officers, several of them whom I've met with, who are Fortune 500 CLOs.
Right.
And almost think of analog versus digital. So these systems that were in place for many years map oftentimes the academic classroom of a score, of a grade.
Yes.
Right? So there's compliance, check the box learning. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But when you start to move to outcomes,
yes,
the whole game changes. You move from analog to digital.
Right.
And so that's already taking place. The frustration that's taking place in chief learning officers, maybe some heads of L&D, sales enablement executives, anybody in training, they're not alone, and they genuinely are looking for solutions in order to move to digital from analog.
And so is what people, our organizations, what they should be thinking about is actually changing their mindset about thinking about outcomes and how do you design a learning environment and learning materials to promote those outcomes rather than it just being just competency and skill led. Would that be fair?
I would say that competency and skills are a component to get to outcomes. So if you kind of think moving left to right, you know, you have a competency model, and the goal of that competency model is to actually set aside specific skill sets that you want your person, your coworker, your team member to learn and flourish in, so that will enable them to do what? Execute the right activities that will lead to the appropriate outcomes. So
right.
It's not linear, right? It's a loop, but it's basically four stages. And so I would say there's three key areas that you need to focus on. The first is a focus on outcomes. You brought that up.
Yeah.
Begin with the end in mind. What are you actually trying to accomplish with learning in the first place? And is it measurable?
Right.
Secondly, make it fun. Now this is not aspirational, it actually can be inspirational.
Right.
This is how you actually get to a rich learner engagement. And that's the phrase many CLOs aspirationally wanted. And then third, learning can actually become part of your culture. Don't look at it as no longer an event, and don't treat it as such.
Mm.
So, you know, you've heard the term continual process improvement, right? Everybody wants that.
Yeah.
Whether that be in manufacturing or sales or service. Well, how do you get continual process improvement? By creating a culture of
yes.
continual process improvement. And that includes you genuinely can create a culture of learning. And I'll share a little bit later concretely how MindTickle is doing that in the workplace.
Well, I mean, you just alluded to it there. I think we've sort of talked a bit about the problem, and that's probably going to resonate with some kind of people. I mean, I haven't been in corporate life for nearly 15 years now, but I kind of remember what it's kind of like. But I'm quite lucky in that I'm naturally curious and a bit of a self-directed learner in many kind of ways. But tell me about what you guys are doing to try and address this problem, and then to help organizations almost like focus on the outcomes and then achieve those outcomes?
Yeah, so I think just the fact that we're focused on helping our clients achieve the outcomes they want right away sets us apart. And going back to earlier, you mentioned you need to have a mindset.
Yeah.
And I'm not playing on the term mind tickle, but you really need to have a mindset and really have an attitude that, you know what, we actually can create a culture of learning here.
Mm-hmm.
The problem in the past is they weren't sure how to do it with the analog tools. Now that we have some digital tools, how do I put those in place, right? Where is the precursor? You know, show me the baseline and benchmarking. So what we're doing is, first and foremost, we're actually creating, we've created a learning platform back in 2011 where people can thrive and have fun and actually learn. So I asked, you know, where does the word mind tickle come from? And I was told by one of our founders it means education plus fun.
Right.
And I thought, okay, well, I've never heard that before. So what does education plus fun mean? And what it means from an actual practical standpoint is that one of our clients who, I'll just give you an example, one of our clients who's just scaled very, very fast, enormously to 10,000 of channel partners. I said, how did you do that so fast? And he said, oh, well, we made the entire experience fun. And he mentioned the word fun 7 times in less than 20 minutes. So this isn't just aspirational. It actually works because when people are enjoying what they're doing, they get engaged with it. That starts to create that rich learner engagement. And so at MindTickle, one of the things, again, that's a real differentiator for us is I look at us as an engineering company because 80% of all our team members are engineers. They're focused on innovation and finding and solving problems for our customers. In some cases, Adrian, I'm hearing about problems that our customers don't have much of, but they're important enough, so we're already solving them and we haven't been asked.
Right.
So what that means is we're actually, I don't want to sound like we're the next gen learning platform. I think that would be a presumptuous statement, but literally when you have 80% of your company focused on innovation and enhancing the product for the marketplace, it's a great place to start. And what I mean by start is it's a great place to start the correlation of learning outcomes, which our clients can see, and that is the aha moment. They can start to correlate learning outcomes to performance outcomes.
Right.
And that's very powerful.
So let me go back a little bit, and you talk about this, the idea of making learning fun. I mean, so when I think about fun and I think about sort of technology and the one of the things that sort of springs to mind is does that include sort of gamification, or are you actually kind of actually doing just it's pure fun and we don't need to soup it up with the gamification side of things, or how does it work?
And, you know, when I first heard the word gamification and learning, I was like, really? I was a bit
thank you.
Hesitant.
You said it. I tried not to say it.
No, right? I mean, you know, I'm just, you know, speaking from my perspective. And yet, until I actually experienced, right, gamification in a learning modality, it actually became fun. And I, my competitive juices got going.
Right.
Right. Nobody wants to be last. If there's a real-time leaderboard that you see, especially with your peers, all of a sudden, I'm going to give that extra effort. And the gamification actually does make it fun. So rather than sitting through a one-hour lecture or, you know, death by PowerPoint, I was actually engaged with gamification. And it made a big difference in my attitude toward, wow.
Right.
Okay, I can actually learn in a different way.
Okay. So I know I understand a bit more. So, I mean, so Pat, you know, the primary focus of my kind of blog and kind of my research and kind of the work that I do is, you know, I had to help companies deliver better service or a better experience to the customers, but also ultimately to produce better outcomes for both their customers and also their people. And learning, I think, is a real kind of part of that. But so tell me how something like MindTickle would work in practice, say, particularly for somebody that's, I guess, your sales guy, but something that's aligned to this, like a customer success team, given the focus of my blog. I mean, what sort of things, how would that play out for them in practice, if you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. And thank you for asking that question. So there are a few of our clients at MindTickle that we have a pretty healthy, robust is so overused, right? But we really are almost embedded with some of the customer success teams at our clients. And the reason for that is because of the impact. Here we go back to outcomes that we're having.
Right.
So there's a couple things. Depending on the customer success team, right, how we enable them, that could be in a variety of ways. It depends, for example, are they sales oriented?
Mm-hmm.
Are they more technical focused in their customer support? Are they a concierge white glove service? So as you know, Adrian, being the subject matter expert in all things, you know, CX and customer success, one size does not fit all.
Sure.
But what we've learned from our experience is that for the customer success team, what we're seeing is having incredible alignment with the sales team.
Right.
And I'm not being sensational here. What I mean by incredible, I mean highly collaborative, seamless. The messaging is the same that you hear from a salesperson as you hear from a customer success team. Now, let me ask you, Adrian, when was the last time you actually heard consistency from a salesperson in an elevator pitch with a customer success person?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. It, not very often, because many people don't get the incentives aligned and therefore everybody's off doing their own thing. And so if you like the incentives aligned, but you also have the, like the content and the learning environment all aligned, then yeah, it makes sense that people would all start pointing in the same direction.
Yeah, and that's what we have with companies like Procore and MuleSoft and Qualtrics. And it's not so much incentive based. It's truly an outcome and a fruit of a lot of applying rigor, discipline, and process by having a genuine enablement learning platform of which the customer success team now becomes very strong,
okay,
very proficient from a learner, and it's ongoing. So we're not pulling the customer success team out of the field. They are actually learning while they are performing customer success requirements for their job, for their customer, collaborating with sales, collaborating with other lines of business,
okay,
all simultaneously.
So I tell you what, Pat, I mean, let's see where the rubber hits the road kind of here. I mean, because this is like, I talk to lots of different people about all sorts of exciting kind of new things and important kind of issues and things. The thing I'm really interested in is, and I think the thing that really works for me and helps me understand it, is if you could possibly give me a couple of examples of people that you've worked with and that have adopted the sort of MindTickle approach, and sort of, you know, give us some idea of how they've benefited and what we can learn from their experience, just because that just kind of makes it just real, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. So first of all, I'll mention a few companies. Some of them are in the technology space.
Uh-huh.
And they've adopted MindTickle for their customer success teams. Where they're seeing so much benefit is that really in two areas. One is all of a sudden you have, as I mentioned earlier, this incredible alignment between a sales organization and a customer success team.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that so important to management? Because I'm not going to quote chapter and verse on some research here for you, but what we've found with our clients absolutely affirms the research out there. And for these technology companies, oftentimes they are landing, let's say, in a $10,000 to $50,000 deal.
Mm-hmm.
The expansion, which is oftentimes over 50% of the time, the expansion is 100,000 to 500,000.
Right.
And so all of a sudden, land and expand becomes a critical success factor to driving revenue for any company, especially yeah. major corporations. So I think that's one reason why customer success, for example, Gainsight is one example of a company that's just, you know, rocketed in growth. It's because customer success is now a revenue generator. And what we like to term at MindTickle, not just sales enablement, we talk about revenue enablement.
Right.
Because revenue enablement is enabling not just the sales organization, but literally the customer success team. And that's one reason why customer success is becoming so more important mm-hmm. in a company. So that's one example. And then another is MuleSoft. MuleSoft uses MindTickle, and so does Cloudera, but they use it for their entire company.
Mm.
So instead of having, you know, a siloed approach from a learning perspective, like with a sales organization and a CX team, now you have HR. Now you have L&D. You have field engineering. You have marketing. You have finance. And when you start to get different lines of business all using a learning platform, now you can start to genuinely move toward that learning culture that is so critical to a client's success, especially as a differentiator.
And that's all kind of happening in a sort of like it's what mobile first, and it's all bite-sized chunks, and it's all gamified at the same time. And so, is that right?
Thanks for bringing that up. Yes, Adrian. Yeah, and apologies, I didn't mention that earlier. So the platform is consisting of micro learning, gamification, surveys, assessments, video role play, voiceover PowerPoint. We have the ability to transcribe role plays and videos, starting to use AI. So there's an enormous amount of work that's taking place, you know, behind the curtain, so to speak,
sure.
right? So that these rich data analytics can actually mean something, as in learning outcomes
okay.
to the leaders.
And how does it work in terms of, is that also going to be, is the learning kind of both push and pull, like it's self-directed, but also informed by the analytics that go in the background?
Yes, it definitely is a two-way.
Okay.
So there's self-directed, all right, and then also, and this takes place oftentimes with coaching.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a manager, regardless of their line of business, who is trying to accelerate or promote the proficiency or effectiveness of the learner,
mm-hmm.
right, then coaching is a fantastic way where our platform can actually start to automate mm-hmm. some of that learning process by sending off like a 2-minute micro learning video
mm-hmm.
On a topic that learner is sufficient in. And in addition to that, the learner coach can prescribe different aspects, whether that be a class or gamification, directly to the learner from, you know, directly from their interaction, their engagement. And so what's happening is the learner is being engaged in multiple areas, but they're not overwhelmed, Adrian.
Yeah.
They're not overwhelmed. And then last but not least, all of this can be on their mobile device. And what the research is showing us is that oftentimes learning is taking place on the way to work, on the way from work, at night and on weekends.
Sure. I quite like the idea that this goes back to the whole the idea of, you know, the Peter Senge idea of the learning organization, which has always been a somewhat utopian idea, but a completely aspirational one and a great one, but hard to pull off at scale.
Oh, it is. It absolutely. And I wanted to reference your blog. I think I know you'll correct me on this if I'm wrong, but June 29th, and I really enjoyed it. You were interviewing some executives from Deloitte Consulting, their yeah. human capital practice.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, I'd just like to quote something from your blog. You talked about, the gentleman stated on the whole aspect of a successful workforce ecosystem, his quote was, processes and organizational systems need to be aligned, to the desired culture and should be set up to reinforce and sustain the desired culture.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a great quote by Peter Drucker, culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I believe there's a truism there. And so going back to a learning culture, I don't want, you know, like you, I'm not looking for this conversation to be completely conceptual. Otherwise, you know, we'll waste people's time and we're not going to do that.
Sure.
So let's bring it down, following your lead, to what not only Deloitte said here, but how can you actually create a culture of learning? And so another real world example,
mm-hmm.
I'm constantly surprised by our team of engineers and our people at MindTickle, is that today we are helping one of the largest global beer manufacturers in the world, and we are literally helping them change their culture using the MindTickle learning platform.
So Pat, if I was to say to you, I mean, like, that, you know, we've, you know, a number of different things. Learning is, you know, is a big challenge. It feeds into all sorts of different sort of things, you know, whether it's culture change or it's alignment or performance or agility or adaptability, innovation, all these different sort of things. And it's becoming a bigger challenge with the, you know, the growth in the millennial and Gen Z sort of generations as they kind of grow into the sort of the workforce. I mean, what would you advise entrepreneurs or executives listening to this interview to start thinking about or to think about doing first when it comes to thinking about changing their learning environment to try and facilitate some of these better outcomes? I mean, obviously, hiring MindTickle, that is, or giving yourself a call. I mean, what do you think that you would suggest that they focus on first or start thinking about first?
Well, I would, there's a great analogy. What's the term? If you prescribe without diagnosing the patient, that's malpractice.
Right.
So how often do companies prescribe a methodology?
Right.
Or a training event, or maybe even a sales technology tool,
mm-hmm.
right? Without actually asking their people what they believe could help solve client problems,
right.
customer success problems.
Right.
So my first bit of advice would be, please write up a questionnaire,
mm-hmm.
just 10 simple questions
mm-hmm.
to ask. And by the way, why don't you get some of your frontline customer success people to help you write a simple questionnaire on what's important to our people, and let's get their feedback.
Sure.
What's working, what's not. What would you do mm-hmm. if you were in my shoes? What would you do if you could wave the magic wand and budget wasn't an issue, time wasn't? How would you solve these problems both internally and for a customer? That's the place to start.
Perfect. I like the sound of that. I like the sound of actually going to the front line where the, you know, a lot of the work actually happens and actually gauging their opinion. I mean, I think in doing that, that in of itself, whether it's through a survey or just directly and informally, then that's likely to have a positive result in of itself.
Well, if I could just bring that home for a moment,
sure.
Adrian, for our listeners who are saying, well, yeah, that's a nice idea, but it's not going to work here. I was with a company once upon a time, and the two leaders of the company got a lot of management and top performers into a room for an entire day.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, look, we've been with McKinsey and Company in the past,
mm-hmm.
and we know that almost all of the answers to our problems are in this room.
Sure.
And our job is to extract them from your brain today.
Yep.
Let's get to work. And I'll be darned, Adrian, if over the next 8 hours, these two masterful leaders, you know, created such a culture and facilitated a phenomenal workshop where the majority of the major problems in that company, if they weren't solved within the next 3 months, I would say a majority of them were certainly addressed for excellent outcomes.
Fantastic. So, Pat, thank you for that. I mean, is there anything else that you'd like to sort of point out or you'd like to highlight before I ask you my final question?
I would just like to say that at MindTickle, we are big believers in paying it forward. You know, we are definitely looking to help enable the enablement marketplace, whether that be in customer success, sales, marketing, field engineering. You know, there's several different lines of business. And we are truly committed to helping chief learning officers, sales leaders, enablement executives be successful. And so however we can be a part of that process, it's a real honor for us.
Perfect. I think you might have just answered my last question, but I'll ask you the last question anyway, because I always ask these questions at the end of these interviews. And the question is this. Is there anything you would like to shamelessly plug?
I would like to shamelessly plug the Global Sales Enablement Society's conference, which will be September 16th to the 19th in Denver, Colorado. The Sales Enablement Society just started 3 years ago. We are a nonprofit volunteer organization. And in just 3 years, we have over 3,000 members and over 41 chapters all around the world. So if you're listening to this and you are in enablement, you don't have to be just in sales enablement. I would highly recommend that you attend or that you send somebody. There is so much to learn. These are practitioners like myself who are getting together not just to network for network's sake, but to genuinely pay it forward. It's a fantastic experiential learning experience. I was there last year. We had our first conference in Dallas last year. We had 300 people. We sold out. We had to turn people away. So I'm shamelessly plugging. Thank you, Adrian. The 2018 Global Sales Enablement Conference. Perfect. In Denver, September 16th through the 19th.
Perfect. Well, one thing before you go, I just remembered something I think you're going to love, and it's very relevant to this conversation, is because we're talking about learning and all of that sort of stuff, and we're talking about education right at the beginning of the conversation. So it's my understanding that... Actually, let me step back. So this is something I learned, and I believe this is right, is do you know the root of the word education?
No, I don't.
Okay. So apparently it comes from educare, which is E-D-U-C-A-R-E, which is a Latin word. Now, I didn't learn kind of Latin, so I learned this from somebody that's kind of much smarter than I am, or rather more learned in a sort of that sort of way than I am. But this is apparently what it means, which I think is absolutely beautiful and is completely relevant to what we're talking about. Because apparently educare means to bring the light out from within.
Wow, that's beautiful.
So maybe you should, next time you should go up to a chief learning officer, you should share that you know, that idea or that story kind of with them, and then you should tell them, so we're in the light business.
Right, we're in the light business. Thank you so much for sharing that, Adrian. I did not know that. I did not study Latin, but what I love about that phrase is the focus on the best part of the individual, the best part of the learner. And just to go back for a moment, right, I mentioned what MindTickle was, education plus fun. So our job is to bring the light out from within, make it fun, on the same page.
There you go. Perfect. But Pat, just wanted to say, I think that the area that you're in around promoting sort of better learning systems, creating a better learning environment, to produce better outcomes at a customer, people, professional, organizational kind of level, I think is an important area. And it's an area that doesn't necessarily get much, the light doesn't get shone on it as much as it could do within the service, success, and experience arena. And so I think it's an interesting addition. I think it's an important thing that people should be focusing on. So just wanted to say that's a long way of saying thank you for sharing your time, your expertise, and your insight with us today. That's been great.
Oh, my pleasure, Adrian. Really, it's an honor to be on your show. And again, thank you for having me.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new. And I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswinsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.